100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by Josh Tolker of Before the Echo and Jake Belinda of The Void Hunt. We all went to Ohio separately during the January muzzleloader season and ended up staying at Johnny Stewart's camp together. So we discuss my encounter that I had on opening day with a big buck at 40 yards where the muzzleloader did not go off. Strategy for late gun seasons, good versus bad acorns, Jake's tracking strategy, how to think like a buck, hunting areas with no intel, trail camera etiquette, our life journey to getting to where we are now, and much more. On this week's Mountain Buck Monday story of the week, we have a story coming out of Virginia from Michael Smith. Michael wrote in, As a college student new to hunting, I started messing around on Virginia public land near school last year. I had scouted an area last January after a tough first deer season and only took one doe. Only had two big buck encounters, but passed 50 yards hunting with the bow. I didn't see any sign other than a huge scrape on a saddle between two thick areas with extremely steep terrain behind it. I figured deer would never walk down that drainage, and I hung a camera. Had bucks all over it starting in September and was really targeting one big typical eight. I never saw him, and on November 10th, I had a different big buck walk by at 60 yards. Went out and bought a Walmart muzzleloader, and the next morning, I watched a 6-point come down the steep part at 150 yards, walked all the way to 8 yards where I shot him from the saddle. I watched him fall down the hill and pile up in the drainage. My first public land buck, second buck of my life, and fourth deer of my life. Well, congratulations, Michael. That's an awesome story and really cool to see you kind of adapt throughout the season there and going out and buying a muzzleloader to be able to make it happen. And that's just how it works where then the buck comes in well within bow range. But congratulations, awesome buck. And if anybody wants to go check that out, head over to Instagram at East Meets West Hunt and Facebook East Meets West Outdoors, and you can see this photo and the story over there. And if you have a mountain buck story that you want to submit, please send it to my email, bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. In the subject line, put Mountain Buck Monday. All I need is a short paragraph or two and a few photos that you'd like to share. Love getting to share these stories. Still have a ton of them to go through here. But thanks everyone who's been sending them in so far. And in other news, I can't thank everyone enough who jumped in and ordered tickets for the 2024 Mountain Buck Scouting Camp right away on Thursday night. We had an issue with the website where it was showing sold out when it wasn't because of the flood of people going in and adding it to their cart. So when it does that, the system shows it is sold out, or it was popping up with a warning message saying that checkout is currently unavailable. Well, that should be all sorted out now, and we do have some general admission spots open as of the time of recording this intro, which I'm recording this ahead of time here, so there's a chance there's nothing left, but it will show up on the website if it is sold out. But the VIP option is definitely sold out at this point, but still have some general admission spots. Would love to be able to have you there. Going into year three, I look forward to this weekend of the camp more than any other event that I attend. Looking back, I don't know why I would have expected anything different because it's a bunch of people who for some reason love the challenge of chasing big woods and mountain bucks and love deer hunting and getting together to talk deer hunting, which sounds perfect to me. The camp really feels like a giant deer camp. When people spend money to go learn, there's no egos and no complaining. I learned that from events that I've paid to go to and what kind of gave me the idea to be able to do this. And that was in different sectors, but I learned so much from being in person and being able to interact with people that are successful and people that are trying to do the same types of things. So when registration opened, I was pleasantly surprised to see multiple repeats from the previous years, including one guy who's become a friend of mine and returning for year three. So when people decide to come to camp, they're there to learn from me and the other presenters, right? But I can confidently say that I've learned a ton from everyone who shows up. In deer hunting, perspective is essential, and watching how others see things through their eyes is helpful no matter what the experience level. Initially, I was bummed to find out that we weren't able to do the event at the property where I've been hosting it the first 2 years, but that opened up another opportunity to go to a place that one of the presenters and forester, Kenny Kane, personally manages the timber. So you will see a forest with a ton of diversity, including different ages of timber cuts, oak stands, hemlock groves, and everything in between that we look for as deer hunter. It's one thing to hear us talk about these things on a podcast, but seeing it for yourself is where the puzzle pieces really come together. We also have a ton of great partners pitching in for giveaway products this year. There's a decent chance that you'll leave with product or products valued more than the purchase price of the camp. So if you have any questions on the scouting camp, please send me an email to bo@eastmeetswesthunt.com. Love to be able to help you out, and hope to see you there. If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends and leave a rating and review. As always, I appreciate you and hope you have a great rest of your week.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. What is this, Bo? The collaboration of East Meets West and Before the Echo podcast.
Yeah.
With guest Jake Belinda.
Yeah, the outlier.
We are hunting Ohio for muzzleloader season and staying at Johnny Stewart. Which is too bad he's not here.
I know. I wish Johnny was here. Yeah.
But anyway, you had a interesting evening.
Yeah, we got here last night, and it was funny because we're staying at Johnny's cabin, and Johnny's just like the friendliest person, meets people. I never know who's gonna be where, what's going on, you know, and he's like, hey, my buddy Josh, and I'd known you, Josh, and I had never met you, but as far as through the podcast and everything, and I was like, oh, it'd be cool. And then on the way down, he's like, Jake's coming down, and it was funny. I went and I was like, gonna text Jake and be like, hey, what time are you getting in? And Jake had asked me 2 days ago whether I was coming to Ohio or not, and I never saw the text message.
He gave me the cold shoulder.
Right.
I gave him the cold shoulder. So
we were just talking.
So I was like, all right. So I was like, all right, cool. I thought it was just gonna be me down here. You know, I brought, you know, packing some books. So I was gonna sit here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and but it's cool to be able to have, you know, everybody here. And but this, we were planning on getting a bunch of snow, and me and Jake were like set
I had the exact opposite thinking of you guys. I'm like, I don't know. What if it's a couple of degrees warmer?
See, you brought the rain.
Yeah.
The snow would have been a completely different ball game.
Yeah, we woke up this morning, and just, you could hear it just beating on the camp. Pouring. Yeah. I mean, to the point where, like, it was, you couldn't even hunt in one muzzleloaders, which we'll get how that worked out. But at the same time, it was just such a downpour. You'd never be able to blood trail, just not good. So we sat here, made a good breakfast and bacon and eggs, hung out at camp, and it was almost noon before it let up enough to be able to go out in the woods.
Yeah.
And it poured until noon too. Like it never did.
It never even switched to the point where it would try to lay. Like there was a couple flakes, but
I didn't tell you guys this yet, but it snowed where I was hunting. There was snow on the ground.
There was?
Yeah. Yeah. It was not a good tracking snow though. It was just like a meshy, nasty snow.
Might have to. I would have took the hour venture if I had to get the snow, but
I don't think that's hindsight.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe I just didn't run into any deer, but it wasn't. And on like south facing slopes and stuff, there was no snow on the snow, but it snowed in north of here a little bit.
Did it?
Yeah.
Well, so I was kind of bummed about that, but I mean, this is the first time that I've been in Ohio since last year at this time. So I didn't have any scouting, anything, but luckily Johnny was like, he gave me the intel on where the oaks were, the acorns. Yeah. He was just like, it's down lower. Seems like they're living up high. And Johnny, as he normally does, he knows what's going on. So we all took off in our separate directions there. I was hiking up this hill. I was going to try to go up this drainage and then work the backside of this ridge and just kind of check it out, these different point systems. And I hadn't been on this particular ridge since 2016, 17, something. I mean, it's been a while since I've been in this area. And so on the way up, I was seeing, as Johnny said, acorns down low, down towards the road, and you tell a lot of nighttime feeding activity and stuff. And I was just coming up and bumped a bunch of pretty sure there were four does, bumped up and went down over the other side, and I get up to the top and I just kind of started still hunting, and I just worked the leeward ridge kind of over because I wanted to hunt just on the other side. So I was like, I'm going to stay off the skyline and just kind of work my way around and get there. And it was about, man, I don't know, like two, well, it was like I know exactly what time it was, 2:19 when I sat down, because I was texting Johnny, asking him how he was doing in Iowa, and sat down, grabbed myself a little snack, opened it up, took a bite. Well, I guess I should say how I picked the spot first was there was all these little micro points jetting off this main ridge, and I saw there was on the map, I was looking at Spartan Forge too, and there's a bunch of like bluffs, so a bunch of cliffs, and these two drainages were the only spots that looked like that they weren't completely cliffed out. So I'm like, the deer kind of have to travel off of these things, or the one point that I found they could definitely run off of that based on the slope angle. So I was like, I worked out that point, and it's always like this, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but you always don't know of like how far is too far, and then how far back are you the way you're out of the game. So, you know, when you're hunting like the early and late season, like trying to predict where they're betting at. And the way that this ridge was facing, if you would think of the wind, which it was northwest at that point, wouldn't have been the most ideal ridge for that. But we had a northeast wind earlier, and I was thinking, you know, maybe that buck was, you know, betting out on this point based off of that, and maybe just shifted a little bit and it could still be good with the northwest wind. So anyways, I started going out and I started seeing a bunch of rubs popping up, and I'm like, okay, it's just like you get that gut feeling, like you got to stop. Found a tree, sat down, opened my snack, took a bite, look up, and there's a nice buck walking right towards me at like 40 yards. And I'd said right before that, I need to stand at this spot because I couldn't see down over this little hump, but I sat down to have my snack, you know, take a little break after hiking.
And, well, you're thinking it's too freaking 220.
I thought I had a couple hours before it was going to get good. And there's this buck coming up. I pull up the muzzleloader, click. It runs past me about 15 yards or so, goes about 60 or 70. Pull back the hammer again. He stops quartering away. Click. And I open up my muzzleloader, and the primer had been dinged, like it hit and everything. And I'm like, man, what the heck? And I'm new to muzzleloader hunting. Like I did it last year and I didn't really know anything. Literally, I went out, got him sighted in, and was like, I'm going to go hunting. I've hunted with a flintlock before, and that was about it. And so I didn't know some of the tricks and things to make them operate. I mean, the thing shoots like a rifle, so I thought that's kind of how it was. And anyways, gun didn't go off, and I found out that you should not, and anyone that's listening to this muzzleloader hunt is probably like, yeah, Bo, you're an idiot, but you don't load your gun in like a warm camp, so pouring the powder down the barrel, doing that and loading it, and then going out in cold, wet environment, because your barrel will start to sweat and create moisture and dampen that powder so it won't ignite. And so I had to pull the breech plug out, which was easy to do as far as that, clean it out. I had a little patch from my bino harness, from my binos. I took that, shoved it in a barrel, and cleaned it all out, got her dry, put a primer in there, and cleaned it all out. But man, that really stung, because it's been kind of a long year, and I thought one was just walking into my lap. Like, man, this is it.
Give you one right on the plate. Yeah.
And I will say too, is like, I've had over the years, I started hunting Ohio probably, well, it's been, I guess it'd be 10 or 11 years ago now. And in the early years, and like over the last 5 or 6 years, I hadn't really come here much, you know, last year during muzzleloader season, but I haven't hunted the rut when I used to in 5 or 6 years. But before that, I had luck in Ohio. Every time I'd come here, it'd be the first day within a couple hours. I did that 3 different years, and it's just, that's always been my luck with Ohio. And I thought maybe I should be a resident, because that's just like my lucky state. Well, today was not my lucky day.
Almost.
Yeah. So yeah, what about you guys? How did it go here on the first day?
I went to an area I'm pretty familiar with, and like went as slow as I could through some known bedding areas, and there wasn't any deer in them. I mean, it just wasn't any deer. I found a lot of, like, it was a good scouting trip, because I, you know, I found another spot that I kind of missed in previous scouting missions down here and stuff. But and then You mentioned, I didn't know Johnny said that about the deer were bedding up high, but you mentioned that someone told you the same thing.
Yeah, the local landowner, yeah. Said the exact same thing. He's like, yeah. Go as high as you can.
Yeah. So I got on my Spartan Forge and just, I found a ridge that looked like has a lot of points on it and whatnot. And it's a spot I hadn't really been to yet on this chunk of the public. And, as I was going up there, I cut some ground disturbance, thinking like I'm falling a deer, you know. I'm like, I'll just follow this deer and see where it goes to. Maybe I'm falling backwards. Who knows?
Well, deer, I mean, I don't know about you, Bo, but I track deer a lot in the snow, and they typically go to other deer. Like, yeah. Deer will find other deer, yeah. Very prominent.
Yeah. So. Anyway, following these tracks, I go like 150 yards and there's a coyote at 30 yards looking at me, like turned around looking at me. So it spooked off and went into the clear cut, where I kind of suspected the deer to be bedding. And this clear cut.
A little drive on for you?
Yeah, except for the wrong way. But the clear cut, if you can imagine, it goes over two ridges. So like there's a ridge on the west side of the property and it goes into the clear cut. The clear cut goes on the top of that ridge down into the hub, up, and then it goes back up onto the east ridge too. So I was just going up to the next ridge on top of that, on top of the ridge where the clear cut was, and I got up there and there was deer sign, and there were some red oaks dropping up there that were still on the ground.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah. So by this time, I walked a bunch like you did today.
Yeah, I mean, I just covered ground.
Yeah, because it was loud. I mean, all that snow was falling off those trees.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I could have jumped deer. I'd never have known it.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was quiet walking, but you couldn't hear because everything
was dripping.
Yeah. But I sat there. I just did like you. I just sat against a tree.
Yeah.
Actually stood. I stood. Well, I initially sat down. I brought a little chair with me. And I got sat down. I'm like, gosh, man, I could.
You brought a little chair with you?
Yeah, I did. It's wet, dude.
Hey, I'm just mad that I didn't get the memo.
Well, I'll tell you this though. You see those coveralls that are laying over there by the door?
Could have used those.
Yeah, I left them here. So I just had on a freaking pair of, I didn't have any long underwear on, nothing, just a pair of pants on.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I was kind of,
I didn't
struggling.
Know if you meant to do that this morning.
No, I didn't.
This
I
morning.
Meant to bring those with me.
I thought you were just trying to prove how tough you were or something.
No. But anyway, I sat there until I had 10 minutes left of light, and I just didn't feel good about it. And I kind of got up and I walked down the ridge a little farther. I think that's where I'll go in the morning if I go back to that area. But anyway, packed my crap up and I was walking out, and there's a big two track on this property. And I was walking out, I jumped some deer, but they were down low. So I was on this two track that's graveled, like it's old two track. That's not, yeah. You know? And so it makes a lot of noise walking that gravel.
Yep.
And those deer heard me and they busted out from the bottom down there. Now, they could have been up top and came down, you know, this evening. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But
no, that makes sense.
That's it. Wasn't very exciting.
Yeah. I didn't really have, not much going either. I did some scout. I mean, I came down in gun season.
Yeah.
Came down in second gun. But nothing is, there's no intel for the late season that I have besides there's food everywhere. If you haven't noticed, like,
yeah,
there was plenty of acorns early and now there's red oaks and black oaks lower in mm-hmm. that mid level. But there's a lot of food this year.
Yeah.
So I think it spread a lot of deer out just in general.
This is my second year hunting here. Yeah. Last year was my first year and like,
it's intimidating.
Well, I'm from Indiana, so I'm used to all the hills and stuff, but like the more I'm here, the more I just want to come here during the rut, dude.
Oh yeah, I know. Except for the pressure.
Yeah. But I don't know.
I think the spot I was at today, I think you could really get away from pressure in the rut, 100%. It's just too rugged of terrain, and it's one of those tucked in away spots. Like, I would have never found that road that I was on by myself. Like, if it wasn't for the inside scoop from the guy that lives here telling me about it, and he's like, because I sent him a general point that I wanted to get to. He's like, oh, that's, you know, you can like almost drive to that. And I'm like, what? Like, I literally thought that I had to walk 2-3 miles to get to it. And I could park 250 yards away from that pin.
From the pin.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yeah. But, I mean, like all the sign I seen was all rut sign. Besides yeah. the one big track that was from today, you know, sometime midday before I got there. But it was a lot of big rubs.
Yeah.
Rut. And then I just don't know.
So what do you guys, like, you know, it's January now. It's at the end of the first week of January. Like, what is your strategy at this point for this gun season? Like, what are you looking for to be like, all right, I'm going to sit my butt down in this nice comfy chair next to this tree? Like, what makes you decide to do that for either of you?
Me specifically, to be honest with you, it's changed because of last year, the buck I shot last year. I think that deer are to the point now in this late January, you know, this January time frame, that I think if you see a deer, they're not going to be so alert that they're going to be out in front of you 200 yards when you jump them. I think they're going to stop and look at you for a second. It's, you know, like early in be like right the first week of October.
Yeah.
Where they jump and then they stop. And I think it's the same now, where just like the buck that you shot at, he went out there at 70 yards. Tried to shoot at. Right. Tried to shoot at. But and then he stopped again.
Yes.
I think if that was the first gun season or the second gun season, they would have just been completely full bore out of your sight.
Yeah. And I'm not, I mean, you guys brought it up and it kind of makes sense. That buck might have heard me rustling a little bit in leaves and sit down and was curious, and that's why at 2:30 in the afternoon
they're a herd animal, and this time of year they herd up. Bucks tend to get back into bachelor groups, so that they want to be around other deer for safety and numbers, so to speak. But I think that you can get away with being a little quicker when you're walking in the woods this time of year and not being so methodical. Of me personally, that's why I covered as much ground as I did today, because if I do see something, I think I'm gonna have a little bit more time to see it, judge it, not gonna just peel off the side of the mountain.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is, like, if you bumped, say you bumped him at like 50 yards, he might run another 40, stop and turn, and gives you a chance to get a rest and shoot and whatever.
Yeah, because I mean, deer, they get bumped by other stuff, you know, coyotes, like you've seen other things that they do that all the time. Don't going to take the chance when it's high pressure gun season.
I was worried today. It's funny you said that, because I was consciously worried that I was being too quiet today. Like, I'm like, I don't know if they'll freaking get up right now with me. Because I'm pretty good at still hunting, and I was going through, I'm like, there's no way these deer can hear me.
Yeah.
You know, and I, like, if they don't see me and I sneak through here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I should be louder or not.
You know, I'm glad you guys are bringing that up, because, like, I felt like I wasn't getting, I mean, obviously it worked out, that situation, but I wasn't getting anywhere. If I were to be still hunting the whole day, I just had this thing in my mind that I was just going, I feel like I was going too slow.
Yeah.
And I felt like it's because I also don't know the area. I wasn't sure exactly where the deer were going to be at. And it was so open that I was just, like, kind of concerned for it. But both of your comments on that makes a whole lot of sense. One, you are trying to get them to, because, like, spotting a bed of deer is super difficult, even when you know where
they're
open.
Even bedding.
Yeah.
Like, it's because there's, you know.
Yeah, they lay low. I mean, yeah.
But there's been a lot of times in the wood, and I use the, you know, terms when I'm walking and scouting, and other times of the year, that how many times are you just walking nonchalant and you actually walk up on deer? They were watching you walking.
Yeah.
And you just caught them as you're walking and now stop.
Yeah. And they don't move until you smoke.
And they don't move until you move again.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where certain times of year I change my speeds.
Yeah.
And this time of year, I upticked it. And it's simply the fact, like last year, that buck I shot, he seen me. He was looking directly at me before I seen him. But he was curious. He had that just like look of like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you? By that point, it was too late. The gun was up. It was on him, and it was game over. But I feel like right after like the rut, they're really on edge because they've been hunted. Gun season, first gun, they're really, you know, they know what's going on. They're more completely alert. Well, yeah. Now that it's like they're more docile, their demeanor's down, they're just trying to survive, be with other deer. And
But what I was looking for, Bo, kind of answer your question, was like I was trying to get to, I was still hunting my way in, and I was trying to find something that was they were feeding on in there. And I know the property well enough to where I know like where a lot of the bedding areas are, but you know, I was, and I never did find that until I got up on top. And there was some red oaks up there. There's a bunch of greenbrier up there too. And that was the best deer sign I'd seen.
Yeah. And did you notice, so there was at least what I noticed here or the spot that I was hunting was there was a lot of the acorns up top either had the little wormholes in them.
Yeah.
So the deer weren't eating them, or they were already, what's it called?
Germinated.
Like they were already growing sprouts.
So I don't know the specific term, like name of those oaks. It's a chestnut oak family.
Okay.
That you're seeing, cause they are loaded everywhere.
Yeah.
And they were germinated back in the first gun season in December, like the first week of December.
Yeah, Johnny mentioned that they won't touch them.
They weren't touching them then. So that's
I noticed that up higher, it seemed like. And yeah, and I didn't pay attention to what – it was so tough because where I was at and was such a mixture of different oaks. You looked on the ground, you could see white oak, you could see red oak, you could see chestnut, you could see black oak. It was just like – Everything was there.
And this was not a good spot still. Like I didn't, it was just it was like 4:30. I'm like, I need to freaking sit down for the last half hour or so, you know? Yeah. So it wasn't like, it was just, there was more deer sign up there than I'd seen so far. So,
yeah.
I was the same way. I got to a point, I almost went back to the truck. I was like, I'll get to the truck by dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go out another 500 yards to the end of the clear cut and check it out.
Yeah.
That's where I found like most of the deer sign.
Yeah.
Was like that point where you want to stop.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
I pushed a little, you know, I second-guessed myself. I actually walked like 20 yards towards the truck, stopped, turned around, went.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do it. I got enough time.
That's why I got up like 10 minutes before dark, because I was like, I'm like, I want to go down the ridge a little farther because I want to see what was over there.
Yeah. What's
and I just got down ridge there and glassed for a while. I had my binos with me and I glassed the whole time because I was so worried like these deer aren't going to get up. And I just was glassing like, man, there could be one laying in that bush or that brush pile over there. And I glassed and obviously I never saw anything. But
I seen a big thing that I've been trying to pay attention to more is squirrels. Where I find squirrels, I always find deer. Like,
well, probably because they're eating the same thing.
I mean, they're feeding on the same thing, but just in this big.
And you know what? The only time I saw a squirrel was up there on that top.
But the same areas that I'm seeing, like, especially this late, when you find one squirrel, you'll find two, three, four, five all together. And then you start really looking, And okay, here's the fresher deer sign. Like, that's how it is for me anyway.
It's actually funny where I saw that buck at. I had squirrels all around me because, like, I always say I'm a squirrel magnet where they, whenever I do come into a group of squirrels, no matter where I'm at, they just like stare at me and then just start doing their little alarm thing that they do. And I'm just like, can you stop? Yeah, just doing these, yeah, noises. It was like, I felt like everywhere I go that those things pick me out. And I'm like, can you stop? I'm trying to be stealthy. I'm not trying to kill you. I'm trying to kill a deer or an elk or whatever it is.
That's funny.
Yeah, it is. It is funny. But like, yeah, that's for me, like I was just, I think if we would have got snow, I would have been more focused on the food itself They probably didn't get up a little bit earlier and go to that food. Maybe I would have hunted a little bit lower in the evening there. But just the fact that it was rainy, I mean, it was colder, but not like getting them in panic. I need a feed mode. So I was like trying to find where
they just wanted to dry off. I mean, that's it. And then they're like, okay, well, if I'm not mistaken, most of the deer are bedding pretty much where they're feeding.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I found. Like most of the beds I find feeding right next to it. They're not moving a super far away.
Right.
All the trail systems that I was on, you know, that I found, nothing really was fresh.
Yeah.
Like they were beaten down, but it was all rut stuff.
Yeah. That's same story here.
I seen one fresh confirmed track and it was a giant buck track, but I don't know if I'm gonna head back to him or not. It's one of those.
So yeah, talk about how you were describing that track. I think that's helpful for people, like how you were saying you were putting you basically you had four fingers and then spread apart. Yeah, and it was
my index and my middle finger was in his left side and my pinky and ring finger was in his right side, and it legitimately my whole hand fit in his track because his dew claw, basically I put my thumb down and that's where you could see his dew claw, and he was going downhill, so it was probably his back foot trying to slow down, but it was spread out like that. And there's no does that are going to be that big, you know.
Yeah, 100% digging their dew claws in. It's like doe tracks are usually a little, you know, more heart shaped.
Yeah.
And
yeah. They're thinner. He was wide, and there was enough mud that I could tell that he had a stagger. I could get into tracking as a whole because I do it a lot. Like his stride. So my step when I'm walking is 18 and a half inches to 19 inches, and that buck's track was 19 inches. And from my history of tracking deer, it's typically an 180 to 200 pound deer. They're muscular structure, their skeletal structure.
I thought you were gonna say 180 to 200.
Yeah, injury.
I was like, man, that's impressive. Yeah. Pound deer. I know, I got you.
So I've done it. It's one of my favorite things to do is just track deer and learn about them. But I've learned that 4, 5, 6 year old deer, they have a certain stride length and a certain width between their tracks.
I'm just gonna say the big barrel chest makes a little bit.
Yeah, they got a little more of a waddle, so to speak. You know, there's 8 inches between their steps, and there was just enough mud that I could see each individual track for probably like 10 yards and I could judge it. And I was like, this is a mature big deer. And I followed it for maybe 75, 100 yards. And I found a bunch of beds and a bunch of rubs, like bed rubs. And he was definitely there more times than not, but it looked more rut stuff, like, you know, November stuff. I maybe just caught him going back in a loop or something. There wasn't enough intel that I'm like, 100%, this is where he hangs out all the time.
Yeah.
It was like, this is one of his spots, but where did he come from? Because that's when that wind switched from northeast to northwest.
Yeah.
So he could have jumped, and it was right over a saddle. So I think that he was on the other side and then switched sides, basically onto the other side of the hill. So that's just putting what I gathered in that short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, all this stuff is just like, I guess the way I've looked at it is like, if you make it make sense, like if it feels like it makes sense, you don't overthink it. It's just like, yeah, trust your gut of like, you know. And I think Johnny's one of those people that does that incredibly well, because like he'll tell some stories on something and I'm like having trouble following what he's saying, but that's what he's seeing. And yeah, normally he's right. And like, and there's situations I'll get into like that where it's like, would I think like a deer would normally, you know, even do this or go off of this side of the hill or do whatever? And it's like, but that's what these things are telling me. So why there's no like, you know, like you can look at, I was actually thinking about this as I was walking down tonight, and it was just getting dark and I was coming off this hill and I saw this trail on a super steep, like, you know, side hill. And it was just like, man, that's not normally not a place I would have thought like deer to be traveling based off of how steep it was. I thought that maybe be at the bottom or coming up this ditch or doing whatever. And it's like, there's rules of thumb, but there's no absolutes in deer or deer hunting.
Yeah. Sometimes deer just want to go point A, point B. They don't care.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's no rhyme or reason, and that's fine. That's why it makes it so fun, and why there's can be endless podcasts.
Yeah, right, right. But you're right about like Johnny. He's very sure of himself. He's like, that deer's doing this, and he's just like convinced of it.
Yeah,
you know
that. But that confidence,
yeah,
helps. And
that's what I meant.
In his turn, you know, which is rubbed off on me a little bit. Hunting is like, okay, he's confident in the intel that he's looking at with his eyes, and then he's like, it's that deer's right here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So he stays there and then ends up seeing it or a buck in that area. Where I get too into my own brain sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
Oh, like just like I just said, well, his beds are there, but maybe he's not there. There's multiples that it's 20 yards away from where I found the only fresh big buck track that is probably his. And I'm just overthinking it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, man, Johnny, I can't say enough good things about him. Like me spending time in the woods with him. And I know Jake, you've got to spend some time over the last couple of years. Like I'm a sponge. Like I just shut up and let him talk and like listen and see how he views the woods. I remember summer scouting with him. I hate summer scouting. And like, and just going out and watching how he's even doing things. Like I went to an area, he was trying to find this buck in this area. And we go in and he goes through this spot and he's like, that buck, he's coming through here and he's walking through and he's going to hit that scrape. And and I'm like,
You gotta do his voice when you do it. You do a real good Johnny Stewart.
Like, gotta go through. There's that buck. He's coming through, and he's coming through there. And but like, the way he visualized it has had me like has changed the way I look at things. I've learned so much from him, and his woodsmanship skills are like second to none.
Johnny, me and him talk about he tracks a lot in the snow too.
Yeah,
for fun.
Yeah,
and that's where I've kind of like, I took it from my dad, and then hunting with Johnny a lot and stuff. Tracking a deer, a buck specifically, you just learn like why does a buck walking like you wouldn't. And all the other deer went to the easy way. The buck did this meander around something, and why was that? Was it his headgear? Was it just their attitude? They do different things.
Yeah.
And that's where 100%. Johnny, I think, has tracked so many in his life that he just thinks like a buck specifically all the time when he's walking through the woods and he can visualize.
Well, and I've even thought about it like in Pennsylvania when in rifle season when we'll do deer drives, we'll get, you know, 2-3 people pushing, a couple people sitting, and we're going through and you watch how bucks escape. And you can learn so much about how a deer escapes. And my brother was actually talking about this, his in-law family, they'll start from the beginning of opening day of gun season doing deer drives. And they've learned like such a strategy to deer drives and what these bucks will do. And they'll push the tops that are these clear cuts and they'll run down, hit some of these ditches and they'll try to circle back up and come back around, get back to their safe spot, you know, and just like just learning how they move, and every train's a little bit different. But once you learn some of that stuff, it's all just pieces of the puzzle to understand.
And then it's repetition.
It's, repeat yeah.
the like habitat.
100%, man. It's so cool, man. I learn so much about deer every single day I'm out, and every single year it's just like learn more and more, and still doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah.
I know. You know,
sometimes you scratch your head. Last year was the first one I can say that it was just pure, like, that was how it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Just textbook, everything working out.
Yeah. You still walk around the woods and feel like you don't know what the heck you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like.
100%. That's been the year for me of just like feeling like, you know, your best laid plans are just that until it's not, you know, right. And then it's just like, okay, what, you know, I'm like, well, I think they're bedding here sometimes, but maybe not. And like, you know, you just go through these scenarios and it's just kind of wild.
Yeah. I was walking that top, those clear cuts I found. I mean, they're nice, but they're to the point of pole timber that there's nothing to feed on.
Yeah.
There's no undergrowth. There's no greenbrier. So it's just kind of like they're to the point of they're almost junk.
Yeah.
Besides, they're some thermal thicker cover getting out of the wind. That's pretty much it.
Well, the one thing I'll say, though, about pole stands is in Pennsylvania specifically, pole stand clear cuts that are like 20 years old type deals, for some reason, I find big bucks living in there. And,
well, that's
and
my, how this one. This is exactly how.
And the way and the reason why I think is because like when you look, if you look into one, you can't. I mean, it's hard. It would be hard to pick out a deer laying in there. Mm-hmm. But if they're laying in his bed looking out, they you have a clear you. View. Yeah. Like they can. It's thick, but it's not.
So if I had to describe exactly how that buck's bed was, he was 20 to 30 yards inside of the cut. Typically, how that laid out was it was on the west slope, so the wind would be in his face, looking back into the open woods.
Yeah.
On the old logging road. Because his track went down, but the way his beds were shaped was directly, like you're saying, inside of a cut.
Yeah.
With a bunch of deadfall, you couldn't, he would blend in. There was no way you would be able to see him. And then if you did jump him or something else did, I mean, he's straight down, and he's gone. Like, there's no chance, because it's thick. The clear cut went pretty much to the bottom, and then pulls the other side. And I mean, there's no chance you're going to see him.
I'm still learning clear cuts. We don't have as many in Indiana. We don't do as much of that stuff.
What's been your impression of them, or what?
I mean, the property that I've been hunting here has a couple of good ones. Like, and I don't... Dude, I don't know how old they are. Like, I don't know anything about clear cuts. I'm just guessing. But
are the ankle size trees?
Maybe slightly smaller.
Probably 5 to 8 years.
Okay, I was gonna say the exact same thing. Yep.
Yeah,
and it. I mean, that can depend on a lot of stuff. Type of
trees. Yeah.
The type of trees.
Like, what'd you say? Pole cut.
Pole stand. So, like, pole stand to me is something that's like softball or bigger. Like. Honestly, I mean, I'm doing this for on the video version, but it's just kind of like, I don't even know what that diameter is.
Right.
Eight inch
diameter.
Yeah. This clear cut's not there yet then.
Yeah. And it typically is enough to choke out some of the undergrowth. Like, like the younger clear cuts that are thinner will have, you know, briars mixed in and like, cause it's got enough sunlight that you have a lot of that vegetation underneath that's coming up. And like those ones that you're talking about
are good for food.
Yeah.
There's food in them and cover.
Some of my favorite, that was my favorite
year. So like clear the deer cuts. May just be inside there and
they don't have to leave.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the stuff that I was in, they were more the 12 to 20 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
There was nothing to feed on because these were straight cuts to the point of no seed trees.
Yeah,
so there's no feed inside.
The way cuts. They do a lot of cuts now are like select cuts versus a total clear cut. Total clear cut, you know, they're cutting like all the trees out. Where the select cuts are like they're leaving these seed trees to be able to, you know, seed the next generation of forest.
Yeah.
And to be able to do it. But the way they used to is they just cut everything because they just wanted to get the timber out of it.
And I think that's what these were. They were old. 20-year-old.
They must have came and done this property not that long ago, because there is a, there is another clear cut that is, I mean, the deer's not going to live there. It's like a, like they
open.
Yeah.
Is there tops?
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't like say they're not going to live there, but they're, so, it's like freshly cut.
But is it, that what I, why I'm asking that is because if it's fresh tops, you should be hunting there.
Yeah, yeah. But
it depends.
No, no, no. It was there. It was cut last year like that too. Okay. Okay. So not
okay.
fresh.
Okay. If it was just this year, fresh tops, late season.
It's not.
I don't know about your area, but fresh tops in the late season is.
That's good to know.
That's real estate.
I have a bunch of logger buddies, and it's like they always say, like in January when they're cutting, as soon as the skitters are shut off, there's deer already in there feeding on the tops, because it's like they can't browse up that high, you know, during.
Yep.
Normal time frames, but that like 1 year old is a tough time frame because it doesn't really get the undergrowth starting yet. It's just kind of a barren open wasteland.
1 to 3 or 4 years is like the, I don't even bother with it really.
Okay.
Just cause there's no cover. There's not really any food.
Yeah. So one of the clear cuts, they probably did it, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and then I think the other one, maybe it was just a couple years ago. Yeah.
So, like the one that you were talking about, like say if there's one, I'm just gonna like paint a picture of this clear cut. So a clear cut that's like, say in that, you know, even 5 to 8 year old range, it's got some briars coming up, it's got some new growth, some saplings coming up and stuff, and those ones, if you don't have acorns, those can be a great late season food source. They'll nip on those briars and it can be a really good spot, especially if it like butts up against like some sort of conifers or like, I'm losing my train of thought.
Thermal cover.
That's exactly right. And like to have that, like in places that I hunt in Pennsylvania that are big woods that don't have oaks, it's like, that's a focal point. For that, and I find sheds in those types of places, it just seems like in the wintertime and early season, both, that they focus in those types of places.
They'll run through them in the rut, too. I mean, they'll use them all year, but it's kind of like they're not going to hang out there all the time. That's more, like you said, early season for sure, late season for sure.
So, like, the stuff that you hunt in your home state in Indiana and stuff, like, is it more just, like, mature forest type stuff?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, like, is it mostly, like, open woods, or do you have some, like, thick cover of some sort?
I would say, if I describe it to you, I'd say mostly open. We do have a lot of greenbrier, though.
Okay.
Which is nice.
Yeah. And not nice if you have to walk through.
Yeah, sure. Nice. But it's something for the deer to.
Yeah.
Can't be quiet in that stuff, by the way.
It's like this area, but there's more ag in the bottoms. We have way more ag than here.
Yeah. So they can transition and use the mountainsides, the public, and then go to the ag country.
And not.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know there's quite a few places in Ohio that are like that too.
Here's how I would describe it. If you would take these mountains and put them in Indiana, and then instead of having these rundown houses on all the draws, you put a nice farm there where the farmers, you know, cut out the fields. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, gotcha. So, that makes sense.
A lot of the fields around here are just overgrown.
And when I first got here, I'm like, oh, look at this hub, you know, has nice ridges around and stuff. And I'd be like, oh, what's in the hub? And I'd like drive by and it's just like a decrepit old house. And I'm like, well, whereas Indiana, it's all farmland at the bottoms.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I honestly haven't spent a whole lot of time in places like that where there's the ag in the bottom. That's interesting. Do you find, like, from the sounds of it, they're bedding up and around these hubs and then dropping down in the evening
and heading to the fields. Yep.
Okay. Well, at least you have that's kind of nice from, like, you know, there's a destination, like, you know, the route. Yeah. It's just like what point that they're going
to
do it.
We do have like the mature forest, tons of oak sometimes to where they don't make it. I mean, they don't.
So you were saying, because you're not familiar with a lot of clear like cuts, so they must not cut at all in that.
I know in all of Indiana, and I there's more than this, but I know one spot where I've seen them clear cut something.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know if it's in, you'd have to research it.
It's probably some regulation. In the
regulations.
They do a lot of burning.
Okay.
A lot of burning.
Okay. I mean, that's good for the undergrowth.
Yeah.
You know, young stuff. But
dude, yeah. I mean, the ag is an advantage, but not having clear cuts is a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Clear cuts are, they do bring in a lot of pressure probably because of people like us that talk about them, but like, it's been like that for since I was a kid. Like clear cuts always have brought in. They know like that's where deer go to.
They hold deer just in general at any time of the year for whatever those deer specifically are looking for. Sometimes they're using a clear cut for bedding.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're using it for food. Sometimes they're using it for to get out of the wind, depending if it's a windstorm.
Yep. Or both. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Or everything from above. But.
Yeah, and I think the spot I'm thinking of in Indiana that's clear cut, I think the state just bought it not that long ago. And I think it was when I got into it, it was like the first couple of years the state bought it. And I think they had actually clear cut the previous owner probably did it. So
okay.
I'm not even sure if it was the state done. So,
but that's kind of why I focused on the area I did today. I was like, because I haven't found many down here.
Yeah.
Like cut specifically. And when I was like, okay, there's a cut on public I can get to.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be deer there. There was some. There's not as many. I mean, we're in low deer numbers in areas.
You're not going to see a bunch here.
But next to it, on the big private piece, you can tell was TSI'd, which is timber stand improvement.
Yeah.
And you can see that it's
intermixed.
There's some cuts. There's some feeding cover. There's just a couple things. But besides that, like, what's the game plan for tomorrow? Like,
with Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
To be honest with you, I didn't check the wind. That was one.
Yeah, I took so I got some service and I took a screenshot with the freaking hourly tomorrow just so I would have
at El Casa Stewart, no internet.
Yeah, no cell service.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to get, Johnny's letting us stay here. We got to get him to start paying for some internet and stuff for us too. That'd be nice. Johnny, so if you're listening, we need something.
Kind of booster.
Get a hold of your Uncle Elon and let's get some Starlink here and let's get, rolling with it. No, I mean, honestly, I'm between two different things. I'm between going to the same area that I was at tonight. Typically if I bump a buck by sight, I'll go right back there. If I bump them by wind, I'm kind of like, I'm not too confident they can be back in that area. He may have gotten both because he went downwind, at that point. So that's kind of where, but he never, I mean, he bound off and stuff, but he wasn't like what Jake was talking about earlier. He was more curious than anything. He stopped multiple times and just then kind of went down over the ridge and the food's there. Yep. It's like, maybe just not in that exact spot, but I'd found after that happened, I went up and there's like a little saddle there and I can actually look back and I think I could see probably about where he was bedding at. And and be within 150 yards of that point. So I thought about doing that and seeing maybe if he ends up circling down around the point and he's feeding down low and coming up to bed and coming up that draw and circling back into his bed, you know, maybe I could get a shot, or go into just a different ridge system and kind of starting from scratch. That's where, but the wind is, from what I saw, is kind of like a west southwest kind of, just westerly. You know, westerly wind.
That lays out good for most of the spots that I V scouted, because that's pretty much typical winds is from the west. So when I'm scouting in our northeastern part of the country, it's always west winds. So I'm like, that's how I always try to get my access points, just because I like to walk into the wind.
Except for a couple of years ago, during the rut, we had like easterly winds for the whole time. Remember?
Southeast.
And it was like, I remember me and my cousin Mason were talking back and forth, and we're like, how many setups do you have planned for southeast winds? I'm like, honestly, I don't know if I have any. And he's like, same here. And it was like going in at daylight, trying to pick a tree in these areas, you know, and just like, it was,
that's a nightmare.
Yeah. So I've learned a little bit from that to still like find some easterly stuff. But like you said, for the majority of it, it's a westerly. But I think after I want to find somewhere to kind of maybe post up for a little bit and then mid morning hike and just like, peeling over, looking into so bowls and these spots.
That's what I've been doing, and that's kind of my thought process. Is one, you know, when you bump a deer, you're probably going to get a shot opportunity because they're a little more calm. But two, I'm using this time to really try to find some areas for next year.
Yeah.
You know.
The what I really like about the spot specifically I was hunting is there's so many little sub ridges, and they're so close together that they're really, some of them are only 100 yards from side to side. So like you kick a deer off, as long as he doesn't run straight off over the point, he runs around that other side. You got a shot opportunity on that other side hill.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. Like last year when we were hunting here, it was super dry, hot, the leaves
crunchy.
I literally felt like every deer 2 miles away was hearing me coming, and that I just felt like I had no chance. Where being wet like this, it's quiet enough, even though there's a blanket of oak leaves on the ground, it's still quiet enough with that you can sneak enough, but maybe create just enough noise to get them, you know, moving a little bit.
And that's the other thought process I have too, is I'm gonna hunt for the whole 4 days. I don't know if it's going to be wet by the time Monday, Tuesday rolls around, and you're not going to be able to walk and cover as much ground.
Yeah.
What's the temperature going to do? Because if it gets wet and then freezes, that's going to suck too.
That's what I was afraid of tomorrow morning.
It's supposed to be the same tomorrow as it was today. Like, but at least when I was looking at it, it said the temperature is going to be like right around freezing, but the real feel is gonna be like 25-26. The wind is supposed to kick up. Josh, what's your kind of plan for tomorrow?
Well, so when I was walking back, I was walking around that clear cut, and off to my west, two deer jumped out of this. They're down in this low area, this hub, went down the hub. They blew, or one of them blew, and then a third deer that I didn't see ran up the opposite way of the hub. So I'm kind of thinking maybe that was a buck. I mean, it could have been another doe. Who knows? But I think I'm
just going to... Could have been $3.
Sure. Could have been.
You never
know. The blow was an awfully... I'll sound like a doe to me, but...
It is feminine blow.
It is 2023, though. 2024.
The two deer ran off, and the other one, I didn't know it was there. You know, I was kind of trying to... I got my binos out and was trying to find him. It was really dark. I mean, I could see their tails, and then something, like I said, just another deer went off the different direction. So, I think I'm just going to go in there and start there in the morning and see if they come back in that hub. And
you know, something. Isn't it kind of refreshing when you do like these types of gun hunts where it's like, you know, say, I don't know how you are at home, Josh, but like where
not this messy.
No, but as far as like deer hunting, where like, you know, you run cameras or do whatever, and it's like you're like focused on an area or trying to figure out a buck. When you come to a spot and you just freelance it and just kind of go. Man, I love that.
I know.
It's,
and
it's
like,
relaxing.
It is.
Like, and I could tell the way you were describing everything and your demeanor. You like just hunting when you were going to go out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to go out here past camp.
Yeah.
Yep.
Out for a stroll and
look at how it happens. Why do we put why do we put so much pressure on ourselves using all this crap and doing all this extra stuff?
I mean, there's, don't get me wrong, there's definitely an element of fun to that.
Yeah.
And that I, but it's like, it's hard to explain. Like, I, even if I explain it to myself, it doesn't make sense. But like, there is an element of like fun of trying to figure out a deer and running cameras. Yep. I love getting pictures. I love
I do too. I like, I enjoy trail cameras.
I love watching videos, watching Buck's demeanor, some of them being a little shy, some being, you know. But there's like, I've realized for myself, I need this mixture like of like the adventure style of just going and like seeing what's over the next ridge and just like going and not having any idea. Like today it was like that example of, it should have worked out textbook, a buck bedded on a point. I see the rubs leading to it. Get there, set up close to the bed, works his way out of the bed, and comes right. I mean, like, it's like there's no, you know, I wasn't going off of, you know, I know Johnny had run and Jake had run some cameras in the area and stuff before, but really, other than seeing a few pictures, it wasn't like I was looking at timestamps and figuring out like when it was just like
a general, like, oh, there's a couple bucks that's been over there.
And it's just fun. And like, and I think it depends on everyone's personality and what that is, but like if you're not having fun with like the trail camera stuff and everything, do that, you know, do that this style and just like have fun with it.
I don't know about you guys too, but I guarantee 90% of the deer I've killed has been just me doing exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, like very rarely do I kill one because I've gotten trail cam history of it or something, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Oh, and that's the thing. For me, anyway, when I was driving down here, I'm like, well, it's pretty much, this is my last hurrah of the year.
Yeah.
So I kind of like just,
yeah,
like shrug off all the stresses you had from earlier in the year. If you had a good year, if you had a bad year, if you, you know, whatever it may be, just, you know, it's, I got to wait another whole year after this one's over, pretty much for me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I,
cause like at this point there's like a week left of the Pennsylvania season or whatever, and I haven't killed a buck there yet. And it's like that, you know, that has stressed me out. Like, just cause like that's my home state. I feel like I put the most work in, like I'm trying so hard to do that. And, but there was a point, I think really when rifle season ended for me in Pennsylvania, where I've come to the point where I've accepted it.
Yeah.
And like, late season, I knew it was low odds, but I was like, I'm going to try. It's not like I'm giving up. Yeah. I'm going to try. But like, I've come to the point where it's like, okay, sometimes things don't go exactly as planned. And like coming to this hunt was like, man, this, like normally if it was November the 2nd or something, and we would have had this torrential downpour, I'd be kind of like, you know, scratch, kind of like stressed out of like, man, I wish I need to be in a tree. This is precious time, you know?
Yeah.
Where this morning I was like, dude, enjoying some coffee with you guys.
I say I had a blast this morning. We talked business, what we did all morning.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. It's helpful for me because you guys have been in this for a long time. I haven't. So I loved it. Like if you'd have told me yesterday that we were going to do that this morning, like that'd have been worth it to drive over here just to, you know, hang out and
talk dude, it's fun. And like letting that be a part of it in the deer camp atmosphere.
It's the mindset that you're going into the hunt.
Yeah.
It's 100%. My dad taught me that at a young age. Like if you have a bad attitude going into the day or the hunt, you know, like, cause I've hunted with different people, you know, buddies, most of them are buddies. Like, oh, why are we hunting here? I'm like, you have a bad attitude. Like you're not going to see anything. Like,
yeah.
It's not going to, the hunt's now not going to work out for, I believe in like the quote unquote deer gods.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good feeling about something, good things are going to happen, you know?
Yeah. That's true in life in general.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And how many times, like, I you know, I was talking earlier about, like, how I've had success in Ohio in the past. And I think a lot of it is because I haven't put pressure on with it. It was like, this was a fun, you know, vacation. And it's like, I know anybody listening is probably like, yeah, it should all, you know, you should look at it all as fun, and it is, but there's also this, when you get so obsessed with something, you get to another level. I mean, throw out doing the podcast and all that stuff. I was like that well before any of that. Like, it's just like, you get, and my dad's an example of it too. He gets like that. It's just like, you get so focused on things, but figuring out ways to, you know, kind of balance that out from time to time is I think a positive thing.
Yeah. I mean,
do you guys, sorry, go ahead, Jake.
No.
You guys smell estrus, doing estrus right now?
I did smell that. I smelled that when Rosie was over here.
I wonder if she got into something back here in that room.
Yeah, it's probably just Johnny's seat here.
Johnny smells like that a little bit.
He wears it all the time.
Smell it real quick. Does she smell like
his
that?
His cologne. A little bit.
Oh, great.
you smell
there's
like
someone that when he back in there. Someone there? Has one up on a shelf. I don't know how she would got to it, though. Anyway. Sorry, I had to bring that up.
I smelled it a little bit, too.
Yeah, I was thought like,
maybe it was just like the holiday spirit.
I was like, are one of you guys trying to lure a buck in
here? Sorry about that.
That's funny.
Yeah, I sprayed myself.
New toothpaste I've been trying.
Oh, man.
That is funny.
Tomorrow, here's a quick tip. If you can have the chance, like I did, I got fortunate and I didn't meet him yet. The landowner and the farmer that farms a lot of the country around here, super open, transparent. He's super open and transparent. Gave me some just quick tips. He's like, hey, rotational crop year. Most of the stuff last year was corn, but it's all soybean and it's down to dirt. There's no ag. Like what was here last year that was ag is it's rotational.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why they're up really high. And that's why he told me, he's like, we pushed out our properties that last year they all killed bucks. He's like, we didn't see a deer. So they're not down on our place. So he's like, go high.
And interesting. That's
why that was just a confirmation with what I scouted already, you know, on the drive down, and why it confirmed where I went today.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. And I mean, being able to meet people locally when you're traveling like that, that's so helpful, especially, you know, if they're willing to be that way. And if you're willing to be, you know, it's got to be kind of a give and take relationship. And like, I feel that, you know, I'm pretty secretive on a lot of things. And I think you kind of have to be.
You have to be.
It's just, you don't want to ever blow up spots or do anything. But, like, you meet good people. Like, I meet somebody in the woods that's hunting the same area I am. I am totally, and if they're respectful and everything, like, I'm open to being transparent with them about what's going on, where I'm going to be at, and them doing the same so we don't screw each other up. Maybe, you know, able to help each other in that way. Oh, yeah. And just trying to be, you know,
I had that happen this year. My number one that I was hunting, a guy randomly that follows me, that's local, whatever. He lost his property, his permission piece. And he went on a random piece of public and it just happened to be exactly where that big buck was at. And he had his trail camera there and a cell camera. And he goes, and he sent it to me. He goes, I completely didn't mean to do that, but he's like, is this the buck you're hunting? Because he's seen my truck and put two and two together. But he's like, I didn't mean to do that, man. And I was like, dude, it's fine.
Yeah.
And he left. He's like, I'm going to leave my camera there. I'm going to go hunt somewhere else. I don't want to bother you. You probably have more history with it, blah, blah, blah. And he ended up shooting a buck the very next day, and I helped him drag it out.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Like.
Yeah.
Just, and that's how it worked out, and it was good karma.
Yeah, great.
And
karma
I went and drug it out, took a nice picture of it for him. He was stoked, you know, because he was a typical 9-to-5 worker.
Right.
He only had off work, and it was just, he let me go after the one I wanted to go after, and he was rewarded the very next day with a buck of his own.
Yep,
that's awesome.
You know, and it goes to show, just be kind.
Yeah, yeah. What goes around,
you don't
comes
know
around.
What it could turn into.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, 100%. And it's, I mean, the thing, yeah, with public land and even private land, like whether whatever relationship that is, whether it's with a landowner or it's with the neighbors or if it's with other people you run into hunting, trying to be as respectful as you possibly can and not touching other people's stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's, yep. It's terrible. You have to say that, but
yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
It's that crazy.
What's ruining hunting faster than just that is we're losing ground in terms of industrial, you know, developments that people are losing permission pieces to where they used to hunt faster this time than any time prior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's making a lot of people go to public. And then if they get a bad taste in their mouth right off the first time that they might try something, it's going to make them a sour taste in their mouth the rest, you know, the time that they hunt.
Yeah.
So it's, I try to treat people, you know, fairly off the rip because I always use like, what if it's a little kid's trail camera that he hung up with his grandfather?
Yeah.
And somebody, you know, vandalized it and he goes out there to check it with his pop.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what happened to my camera?
Right. Right.
What, yeah. You know, that could happen.
Oh yeah. But, yeah, for sure.
I'm going to start writing on all my trail cameras, little Jimmy.
I used to put my name and number on it. I don't know why I did that like 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, yeah. And there's, I feel like that would keep like somewhat honest people honest. And yeah.
And then I started, you know, hunting a lot more and posting and trying to, you know, make some type of, you know, job out of it. And I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't put my number on there. And then they fall, you know, they see them after a good buck and there's my number on the trail camera.
You know, you guys know who Casey Neistat is, right?
I do not.
He's a YouTuber. Anyways, he writes do the right thing on all his stuff. Do the right thing. I'm like, oh, I should put that on my trail cameras. Do the right thing.
I'm going to start numbering mine like 274, 312.
Random numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about putting like fake antennas on all of them. It'd be like a spot that has no cell service. And it's like, again, Johnny's Uncle Elon, he's helping me out here. You guys just don't know about this technology yet.
That's funny.
That's a topic right there in and of itself that nobody's really harped on.
What's that?
Cell cams that might be able to be satellite. That's a big possibility coming in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Because all they need is wired signal, and if they can, you know, get onto the Starlink, right?
Yeah, Starlink.
If the cell cam can send to the Starlink, I mean, you can get service in pretty much anywhere.
I hope that doesn't happen, but I think you're probably right.
In the next 2-3 years, I bet you it'll happen. They might be outrageously expensive, but that's not going to stop people from certain people from buying them.
Yeah,
you know.
And then, you know, another 5 to 7 years, they'll be on sale for $25 at Walmart.
Right, you go to Walmart and find them.
But people that are writing the laws that are smarter than I am, I think that's why they're starting to crack on it now. You know, the live links and things like that.
Yeah. There's been a lot of states this year with the cell cameras. Kind of that topic is getting popped up a lot of states.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
I'm just fortunate where I hunt 80 to 90% of it, no cell coverage whatsoever. Yeah,
so same here.
It's like, well, the old traditional camera, I love going back, you know, about a month later. Oh, look at all this, the sign, and look at the bucks that were here. And, well, the last picture was 2 weeks ago. They're long gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it was Johnny that was saying something. He says new strategy is going to be just looking for areas that don't have cell coverage.
Yeah.
Scouting cell coverage maps.
I've done that already.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I know that like this area that we're at, a lot of it don't have cell coverage. In the bottoms and
most
stuff.
Most of it doesn't.
Anything off the tops of the hill? Nothing.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. It's interesting, but we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out in the coming years.
Time will tell.
I'll let smarter people, you know,
make those decisions.
Yeah, make those decisions. I'll just follow the rules.
Yeah.
And step in line when I see fit.
Yeah, no, most definitely. What was I? I had something else that I was going to bring up about. I guess We didn't really get into it because it's kind of weird since it's a collaboration podcast. But Josh, I do want to, for my audience, maybe some of your audience that, you know, wasn't around from the beginning, a little bit of background and like your hunting and like kind of your style and a little bit there. And I know it's odd kind of putting it towards the middle to the end of the podcast, but like a little bit of what you have going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hunting since I killed my first deer when I was 9 years old, and I haven't stopped hunting since. And you're like, you talked about...
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Earlier you were talking about the pressure of, and you've always felt that pressure of always wanting to shoot a deer, you know, every year. And dude, I remember I killed a deer when I was 9 and 10 bucks. And I swear, I felt that pressure back when I was that age. Like, it's always been that, like that for me. Like, yeah. I've just put a lot of pressure on myself as a deer hunter. So I just been real passionate about deer hunting, and then, did a lot of filming when I was in high school, and, you know, kind of grew into a passion as well. And then, started filming for Dan Infault probably 5 or 6 years ago in the Beast. And then, kind of went off on my own to do my own stuff on my channel, this fall. And that's kind of where I'm at now. And hunting wise, like I hunt, what do you call it? Free permission. What do you call that? Is that the proper term when you don't pay for your,
yeah, land? Just
free permission. Whatever permission. John Eberhardt calls it, free permission. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a few, I hunt a little bit of free permission around Indiana, but it's mostly just, public land.
Yeah.
So, I don't really consider myself a trophy hunter. Like, I just,
whatever. That word's whatever tossed makes around
me, yeah,
quite often this, yeah, time, in the day and age, trophy hunter.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
In my opinion, trophy is whatever you see in your eyes as a trophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it gets you excited, like you were, you said that, I think, earlier today.
Yeah.
If you get excited about a certain deer and situational aware, you know.
Yeah.
That's what got you excited.
Yeah. Dude, I killed a 2-year-old in Tennessee this year that I was just like, I was freaking pumped about it.
Heck yeah, man. Like,
yeah.
100%. I told you about that one in Ohio, and I don't know what year it was that I shot that 2-year-old 12 point. Yeah. And I walked up, I'm like, this is a small body. That's the younger deer. Man, this is cool.
I remember that. I remember that buck.
Yeah.
Because it had what, 6 or 7 on its left?
Yeah. It had 7 on his left and 5 on his right. Yeah.
I remember seeing a picture of that, and you gave, that was back when teaser picks weren't a real thing.
Yeah.
You posted just that side, and I go, oh, that's a giant.
Oh, yeah. 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 And he's a good buck, but like,
yeah.
And
it was like a mini giant.
Yeah, it was a mini giant. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, I think he taped out at like 127 inches of like, you know, tight, just, but
18 dude, inch beams.
Again, it was like, go to a area I found in the spring and go and hunt. And first day in there, comes up at like 3 p.m. I just got off a work call because I was actually supposed to be at work. That was the story one point when I was working a job that my boss didn't live in the same state, and I covered multiple state territories, and I'd tell each company I was in a different place, and I just had to have cell
had to
service.
Do what you had
I carried
do.
My laptop in the tree with me
just in case.
So I could show I was online too, because they had like the thing.
You were in deep
and,
there.
Oh, dude, I was ready. I was so ready to just risk it all. And at that point, I didn't even have a podcast.
Oh, wow.
I just didn't care. I was I wanted a deer hunt so bad that I was just like. So I remember I was on a work call and I had to like talk normal. I couldn't whisper. So I was like, I screwed everything up. And then an hour later I shot that buck.
That's a funny story.
Yeah.
That's, you know, look where, I mean, in my opinion, like I'm looking at, you know, across the room here, you're in a really good position. In my opinion, you've done really well for yourself.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But look what you did to get there.
Yeah.
Like, those stories that nobody hears about.
Yeah.
You carried your laptop when you're supposed to be working. Like, yeah, you're not really supposed to do that, but you knew in your, but you knew in your head, like, that's what you wanted to, like, that's what you need. You felt like you needed to do to get to now where you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the light switched for me in like 2015, and I had no plan how I was going to get there, but I was like, I need to figure out how to run my own business, doing something that I like. And it's just like, I was like, I'm going to figure out a way to get there. And I didn't have a plan. It was just like, I'll figure it out as I go. And I didn't even think the podcast was going to be it at the beginning. It just, you know, it was just,
I did the exact,
it's just going, just having that in my mind. And, but I also knew that, like, I knew at that job that I was at that time, that really the expectations were kind of low apparently, because like I knew what needed to be done and I would get it done. It would just be a, maybe different hours and some different times and of things to be able to do it. And I did the minimum to get by at a point where it's still considered a good level, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And like, I just, I don't know, I had that in my mind. I also remember a time I was elk shed hunting with my dad, and I didn't have my laptop, and I got a call from my boss, and he needed me to pull some files from my computer, which was like, I don't know,
2 hours away.
It was like a 35-minute walk and probably just as much of a drive, and I was like, or longer of a drive, and I was like, oh crap. And I was like, I remember like, nah, I gotta go, like we gotta get up. And going back, and I'm like, oh, sorry for the delay, I couldn't find the file, you know. It's like, I kept my stuff pretty organized. Yeah. I knew exactly where it was, and it was pretty funny. But looking back on it, it is kind of comical to think about that.
Yeah.
My just a quick little tidbit for, I have a similar situation. I knew I wanted to try and make something hunting, fishing, outdoor related a job of some sort. So I literally worked all summer long, and any high paying construction job, something out of town, out of state, whatever it may be, make as much money as humanly possible. And September 1st came, I would quit.
Yeah.
Because I knew I'd, like, you're replaceable. Like, they just need, it's not going to be a career.
Yeah.
I showed up to work every day, sick, no matter, never complained, just straight up. I knew in my head, I was like, I need to make a bunch of money to put it away because I want to do something. And I basically was investing into myself. That's where I bought my first camera and worked my way up. But I had that in my head. Like, I had to do whatever it took. And I just worked until September 1st.
Yeah.
And I literally would.
You should probably tell everybody what you do now, Jake, because my audience won't know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I'm kind of a dual, double-edged sword. So I mean, I do my own stuff, but I also contract myself out. I own a media company, so you know, I work with multiple companies doing different terms of media. So digital platforms, anything digital, pretty much. Video production. The only thing I don't will try and really push is like just the editing part of somebody. Like, I don't want to take on editing projects.
You don't want myself filming stuff sent to you.
Yeah.
And you
try to put it's it just, together. It's, and for me, it's just, my brain doesn't work like that. And it's too much,
yeah,
you know, to do that. So I like the more professional, I'll contract myself out for a couple hunts for somebody else's stuff, get that all done. Like, I do it all the whole time in the spring. And then the fall is more just my stuff, and then intermix stuff, whatever's needed. Fill the gaps. And I'm not going to get into the graphic design stuff. I can do it, but it's like, if I don't feel like I can do something at a super high level, I'm hard on myself. So I'm not going to do something okay that can get by.
Yeah.
Because I just don't feel like it's fair to charge somebody any money for something that's not super high end,
right?
No, that's just you do very good.
Oh,
with
yeah,
the camera, very good.
Oh, work. Yeah, some of your pictures you were showing me are just unbelievable.
It's
just,
I think it's what I just like it.
Yeah,
yeah,
you can tell you have a passion for it.
But that's just kind of my,
and there's some things like when you operate a camera, there's a part where there's a lot that you can learn, and there's also something that's just like an eye for it.
Yeah.
And like, and I think that passion kind of drives out of seeing things that other people don't see, to be able to take those photos to get that B-roll shot and video, mm-hmm. whatever it is, like, and that's...
You either have... I mean, there's people that you either have it or you don't. Like, yeah. you can't... There's a magical... You can't teach the eye. Mm. It's the same as, like, people that are naturally funny.
Yeah,
you right. can't, like...
Like me?
yeah. yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, comedians are naturally funny. That's why yeah. they're a comedian.
Right,
You yeah. can't just teach yourself to be funny.
Right, right.
But, you know, it's a personality trait, and I, that, you know, for my work line that I'm trying to do anyway and continue to do, I have the eye, and it's just now it's the
yeah.
it's repetition.
Just yeah.
Over
yeah.
and over, repeat it over and over yeah. and over.
But for Bo's audience, for me, I do what Bo does, but it's called Before the Echo.
Yeah.
Essentially.
No, yeah, yeah, exactly.
We do the same thing.
What did you do before?
Yeah, so I still have a consulting business in the ag industry. I worked in the ag industry.
Okay.
It's real nerdy for like it's. I dealt with mycotoxins in grains, so it's a mold thing that.
Okay.
So yeah.
You're smart. Yeah, yeah. Is what you're saying.
Well, no, it's no. It's an ag thing. Control mycotoxins in feed mills. I was essentially a feed mill. My previous job, my title was I was a feed mill specialist, and I did that for a company where I would go and do. Help them with mycotoxin problems all over the world. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I've been international traveler, huh?
Yeah. I've been to probably like 27 different countries doing it.
No, that's yeah. crazy.
It was crazy. And that's why I had to do something different. It was too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
well, and I'm sure it's nice now, like, you know, raising a family.
Yeah.
And doing that to be yeah. able to work from home. So obviously there's travel involved with like this.
Yeah. And my timeline was me and my wife. Had our first son in 2019 in October. I was off work after he was born for pretty much the rest of the year. Then COVID hit. And then I didn't have to travel again with COVID. I didn't have to travel anymore. And before I'd be like in China for 3 weeks, like gone. Like not getting home quickly, gone.
Other side of the world, different
yeah.
time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or I'd be in the Philippines or like just wherever.
Wow.
But then, COVID hit. We didn't have to travel for a year and a half. That, you know, that all settled down. And then there was rumbles like we're going to start traveling again. Well, you know, Huck, my son, he's 2 then. And I'm just like, and I love my boss. He was from the United Kingdom and he's the man at my old job. But like, I did not want what he had. Like he'd be gone, you know, whatever, 30 weeks of the year. And, you know, he had 2 sons. I'm like, I mean, how do you do that? And, you know, he couldn't really tell me, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that. So, I mean, I had to do something different. And I was already filming with Dan and doing that. And me and him kind of, he was like, well, let me help you start your YouTube channel, which I already had started it. It was just small. And, you know, he helped me grow it. And then this year we kind of decided to just let me do my own thing. So.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man.
Yep.
I can imagine that kind of travel would just be
yeah
exhausting. Yeah, it's probably kind of fun.
Whenever I started, and you know, I was whatever 27. Yeah. It was cool. You know, I'm like, man, I'm you know, I was in Peru, and then I go up to Canada, and then China, and Philippines, and Indonesia, and everywhere.
I think the cuisine, the food, and stuff. I think is what I would
some
like.
Of them. Yeah,
me. Yeah,
some of them.
Yeah. Like eating chicken feet off of a plate in China is not real fun.
Yeah.
But it's a keep that. But yeah. But that was it. That was it. You know, I just, you know, I don't know. I still work for, like I still do consulting work for them. So I just don't have to travel. It's just stuff that I can do from home. And
that's perfect.
Yeah.
Seems like it's working out pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's
now listen.
Give her another year.
If I have any advice for anybody that's listening, if you want to hunt a lot and you want to make some good money,
construction, owning it,
yeah. not
yeah
the hunting industry.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night. Like everybody that is in the industry, it seems like they have some other type of business. Like I think the juries, we're talking about the juries, I'm pretty sure they own their own construction company.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of them are farmers, like Don and Candy Kiske. I think they're big farmers.
Oh yeah.
And just you hear more and more people like that
in real estate selling land and doing like that's
that blew up
No one told me any of that stuff. I was right. I'm going to be a podcaster. Yeah. You know?
But Bo, you've been doing it for a long time now. 6 years is a long time.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of work. Like, I still haven't ran. Like, I feel like the number one question I get asked is like, you don't run out of like guests or topics. And I'm like, I always have like things lined up and like, I'm always excited about it. And when that stops and, you know,
do something maybe different. I'll
hang it up and try to learn some sort of skill because I don't really have many others. So
yeah, but you're business savvy and tech savvy to the point where just talking with you, I mean, more and more,
you'd be fine.
Where you're going into different avenues.
Yeah,
hopefully your future employer doesn't hear your conversation about working.
Yeah, no, I'm in hunting season. I'm fully dedicated to you, Mr. Employer. Yeah. Oh man, yeah. But in all honesty though, like one thing I will say too about like my previous work, I will say that you can get even if you say you wanted to start your own business, you can learn a lot from no matter where you're working at, whether you're a bartender, whether you're bagging groceries, or whether you're working for corporate America.
Attention to detail.
You can I learned stuff about like public speaking from the standpoint that I did a lot of safety and environmental training. I had to stand in front of people, help me with the podcast stuff, and having to manage people. I got to the point where I was a manager at a place and I had people working underneath me. So like now when I hire people to do consulting work or doing stuff, you learn how to manage people and that was kind of something that like my boss that I had at my last job, which was one that wasn't the one that I did all the crazy stuff with.
Yeah.
Like this one, I was at one place and I had to be very focused on it. I had a higher level job but he knew, like he saw the stuff I was doing on the side with East Meets West and knew that like it's at some point I was going to be exiting. And he gave me so much good advice about like what, you know, learning from what I was doing at that place and everything. It just, I've learned that everything comes, it's all perspective and what you see and making the best of the situation that you have, because it can be translated to something else. Even if it's something completely different, you can pull something from it that can help you. And it's, you know, I just said about, you know, goofing off and taking my computer in the tree, but there's also a point of like, putting your all into, even if it's something that you don't like, and learning from that. But there's also the standpoint of you have to take risk if you want to do something different, to like that's risky of like, you know, I remember I went to ATA show and I didn't have vacation for it, but I just did it anyways and hoped no one was gonna, you know, find out. And like those types of things you got to bet on yourself with too. So it's like this kind of like fine line of playing with it and having in your head that you're okay with if it doesn't work out. Well,
that's if you talk to like millionaires that started any company, you know, like HVAC or what, just small business owners that turned into big business.
Yeah.
They'll all tell you the same similar stories that they took risks at certain points that they felt like they had to do.
Yeah.
And then that they landed and continued on the cycle.
And they do all have the same story. Like, it seems like it's like they struggled for most of their life too.
And then
all of a sudden it worked because they didn't quit, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So even like translating back to deer hunting, when you surround yourself around good people to be able to do it, you know, being here with you guys, learning from your style of hunting, like I learned so much from doing that and being around Johnny and all these things. And it's like, but you know, the next question is like, well, how do you do that? I don't know anybody. Well, you got to be somebody. You got to have value that you can add to somebody else too. And in that front, whether it's just being a good person and being a good friend, or, you know, learning a skill that can translate, like it's a two-way street in everything. And so like, it's just like going on hunts and everything. When I first started going out west on hunts, when it was my first, I remember my first backpacking hunt trip with my brother and my cousin, I would have never wanted to hunt with me again if I was them. Like from the standpoint, I was like, I got into some tough situations, you know, I was like, wasn't probably in the shape I needed to be in to be doing that. And I'd be like, you know, getting bitchy essentially. And, you know, with my brother too. So obviously I'm going to yell at him, but like, I was just not somebody you wanted to be around. And like, I luckily they were like, they stood by me through it still, but I probably would have kicked, you know, myself out the door. But I, you know, I recognize that's like, I need to be a better hunting partner to other people and have a positive attitude and be somebody that people want to be around.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that. Cause I can think back on one of my first trips out west, exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was multiple things, putting pressure on yourself and
putting yourself in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, outside of your element. And I was the same way. I was short tempered, snappy.
Yep.
And it just, I wouldn't have wanted to hang out with me either in the woods.
Yep.
And I'm like, from there on out, and you know, I'm just like, coach yourself a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Try to be a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, when you're around people, but when you are around more like-minded individuals, you feed off each other's energy and it turns into a better experience in general and you have fun. And when you're having fun, usually good things happen.
Yeah. Be willing to learn and be willing to, you know, learn from people that are, you know, better than you and whatever it is.
There's always like, somebody. There's and, always you know, somebody better.
I had... It wasn't that long ago. It was like within the last month, I had a bad attitude about some things. Like, the podcast space, for example, I looked at it in my email and I had sent like my podcast list of like gear I had and like tips. And I've talked on the phone with over 50 people that wanted to start like their own thing. Like, I'm willing to help people, but there's been so many that I felt like have like burned me during that process or like, basically, you know, say they mimicked what I was doing or trying, like, you know, just like things. And I had a bad attitude about it, but I was like, you know what? If you can help, you know, if there's good people out there that you can help and it changed them in some sort of way, that's a positive experience to be able to pull from being able to do that. And the other turn, I'll say, if you're that person, if someone's willing to help you, make sure you're not, you know, a shitty person.
Yeah. Right.
And no, you know, whether it's deer hunting, you know, someone shows you a spot, you don't go to that
right
spot. That meme that just went around, it just went everywhere. I'm like, yeah, that's been common sense to me for a long time, but people thought it's funny that it's happened to me. High school friends show them a spot and before you know it, I haven't hunted it in 10 years because it got burned by him and all his other buddies that he's worked with now. That's why I'm pretty standoffish to the point. I'm quiet about certain spots because it's, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be to an extent.
Yeah.
You know. We're transparent here, but we're still not, like, completely open.
No, you guys don't know where I'm hunting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I would tell you if you asked me, but just
you wait, man. I'll be like, you'd be in their shower and I'll be on your phone, like,
that's
you know,
the thing. We sharing have mutual pins. Respect to,
yeah.
Like, that's where you've been going. Like,
yeah, I mean,
you know, it's a respect thing.
Yeah. And saying all this, it's like, I'm 100% no saint in this learning process. Right, and as you're going through and just like, I don't know, just trying to learn from every situation, and everybody takes things differently and what you think is right and what's wrong, and just trying to be better with it. And that's just kind of the approach that I've taken. And man, I truly do enjoy like the deer camp atmosphere, being around other people that, you know, I love being around people that have different strategies and thinking about things. Like, I just like want to know, like, you know, you were just talking about, like, both you guys were talking about, you know, walking faster through the woods, and I was like walking like a snail going through the woods today. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Like, you know, you jump them at this time of year, they're a little bit more relaxed, and like, you know, and I'll never forget an analogy, and I may get it wrong, that Johnny had back in the day about like deer, what they're doing in the summer versus when hunting season comes in, of like they're just out there. He's like, they're on vacation, you know, they're just on vacation, and then, you know, the pressure comes in and it, you know, changes everything, and you know, like patterning, you know, he's like, you know, someone goes to McDonald's every single day, you know, it's like they get on a pattern, and all of a sudden they're getting, you know, bullied a little bit, and it's like they're going to change that pattern. It's like, Johnny's got the best analogies in the world.
He's the best,
and
dude.
I've hung out with him off like a million times, and he comes up with a new one every single time I'm around him.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, deer live by two things, their stomach and breeding, buck specifically.
Yeah.
But I guess I'd just say, just to kind of wrap this up, for me, is just like, enjoy this deer camp, enjoyed getting to, you know, Jake, I met you years ago, but really last year is when I got to know you and get to hang out with you, and Josh getting to meet you here, and, you know, following along with the stuff that you're doing. Think it's really cool, super authentic.
Thanks, man.
Type of stuff, and getting to know you guys and hang out, hunt, and hopefully tomorrow, I mean, I'm saying probably about 100% we'll have some bucks down tomorrow, so even without the snow, I mean, we didn't want that snow anyways, honestly.
What year did you start podcasting?
2018.
Okay. I went on my first elk hunt in 2017. And I got super into like the Gritty Bowman.
Yeah.
And that's not a thing anymore, but like.
Well, the Gritty.
Gritty is, podcast, but the Aaron and Brian Call thing are done.
Yeah.
But like, I swear I listened to you. Did you have Aaron on super early in your.
Yeah, episode 5 and 6.
Yeah.
My podcast. I've been listening to you since then. When I had him on. Really?
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
And Aaron was doing that podcast in his garage as he was packing gear for another trip. That was before video podcast.
Yeah.
And it was like the worst audio ever. He was like doing other things, and it still literally like doubled my numbers overnight.
Yeah.
Because he's just such a influential person in that space. But funny is, Brian was a situation where I met him at Total Archery Challenge, and I loved his podcast.
That's
you know, he was one of the, him and Aaron were some of the ones that helped me going out west in the early days, and I, you know, he did like this hike, he called it the Gritty Hike at Total Archery Challenge, and I went on it, and just like was walking next to him and talking to him. I was like, I want to start a podcast, you know.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, thinking about it now and how many people have like said that to me, and like how many don't actually start it, you know. I was so thankful that he gave me his full gear list, which a lot of the stuff I still use today. And like, he gave me all that information. And when I got all of my stuff, so just a quick backstory was, I was going to do this podcast, waited a year before I was going to do it. And I went through like, I kind of like drug my feet in a sense of like, I had to like set up the business ahead of time. And I was
doing all making stuff, excuses.
Even though, making excuses. And my buddy Rob, who is now like, he runs like most of the Total Archery Challenge events, I told him about this idea, and he's like, well, what if I gave you a free booth at Total Archery Challenge? You could set it up and have your podcast there, interview a bunch of people, help set you up. And I'm like, that's in 3 weeks. He's like, get on Amazon, order your stuff. And I'm like, okay. And I did it.
Sweet.
And I didn't know how to operate any of it. And Brian and Jordan Harbertson, who is one of the founders of Mountain Ops, helped me set it up in the hotel room. And they were my first episode.
Oh yeah.
That I did, and learned a lot from it.
Really quick.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Dude. So it was really funny.
You got thrown in the fire then. You had some really good help. I mean,
I had some, dude, I did not do
some
this
of the
all
best
alone.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not do this all by myself.
Dude, back in like 2016 to like 19, I got super into elk hunting, and that, dude, I love that podcast when they were doing that.
Yeah. And it's so funny because like, I started this podcast in a selfish way of wanting to learn more about hunting out west.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, well, if I put a mic on, I can help other people. And then, you know, when I started talking about the whitetail side of it in Pennsylvania, I thought nobody cared about that.
Yeah.
And it was like,
that's where everybody cares. You know, there's so many more hunters there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And it was just funny. And it, you know,
there's probably more hunters in PA than there are in like most of the West, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it might
be. I looked at it once where the comparison was like, the number of hunters in Pennsylvania is more than Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana combined.
Yeah, that's what I meant by that.
Like all of them.
Yeah.
I think it was like in two counties of Pennsylvania. It was something like astronomical, like only like one WMA.
I believe it.
I like 100% do too.
Some of the roads I've been on, 100%. 200 trucks, more people than deer, but
yeah, that's funny.
No, it is funny how that works out, and obviously I still love hunting out west. And
yeah,
that's a huge passion. I do too.
I haven't been for a couple years now, but
I'm not good at it. But I just try to keep learning and just try and get better. Like elk hunting has been the thing recently. I finally went on like a full on mule deer hunt, and like I think mule deer would probably be my favorite. But I'm still on the elk train. Like I'm getting to the point where I'm learning enough that I'm getting into elk, and I killed an elk in 2019, and 2022 I had so many encounters and missed a bull and hit a bull and had all these things, but like it's to the point where I'm learning enough that I feel like I'm starting to have fun, like really have fun with it, versus the first 3 years
of the stress of learning is gone.
See one, and I love doing that.
I quit going. I need to go again, but like I've shot two elk and have not found either one of them. So I've had horrible luck elk hunting. I did really good at getting in front of elk, but I went mule deer hunting. I want to tell you this story about mule deer. So I was in a unit that you had to have a couple points to draw a tag for mule deer. And I just would see some freaking giant mule deer when I'm elk hunting, And I was like, I'm putting in for elk or for mule deer. And so I did. And a couple of years later, I drew the tag. I'm like, yes, And this was when Colorado wasn't too bad with pressure.
Yeah.
Well, this was probably was 2019. I got maybe 2018. I can't remember, but I got that tag. And there's this spot where I'd seen two years in a row, these giant mule deer would come out of this little draw, and I'd watch them. And like, I'm like, dude, if I ever have a tag, I'm going to sit there the first morning. I'm going to shoot one of them mule deer. They do the same thing. I was like hunting them like whitetail,
English style.
Yeah. I was using a longbow back then, and I get down there and I'm freaking sitting there and I'm like, I'm ready. I'm like, he's coming out. They do it every year. They're going to come out right here. And I look over to the left. I hear someone go, like that, and I look over, and there's six Amish men, like down the way toward me, and they're like as happy as can be to see me.
Yeah,
and they're the guy's like doing this, waving me over, and so I'm like, gosh, like never seen anybody here before.
Yeah,
and I go over, and it's six brothers.
They bear hunting?
No, they were elk hunting, and they'd each shot like three elk, and it was a mess. But they were just like. They're like, oh, hey, you come and stay with – I was by myself.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can come stay with us in our camp. I'm like, nah, I'm okay. And they're like, yeah, you can come set with me if you want. We can hunt together. I'm like – they were super nice, but I was just like, what are the freaking odds? There's six Amish men up here.
Right, like, where you wanted to be.
Yeah, they're from Ohio.
Yeah.
They came further than me. I'm like, how'd you guys get here? Like, oh, they had a van take him out there. Like,
yeah, those guys are killers too, man.
Yeah, they
all worked their butts
off. I don't know how.
They were – I mean, mesmerized by that longbow. They're like, you have that? You're going to shoot something with that? I'm like, yeah. And they just couldn't believe it. And I'm like, I figured you guys would be like.
I don't know how many times out west I've run into people that are like really close to where I live.
Yeah.
Like I'm 1,600 miles away across the country. And, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Lewistown. I'm like, you're an hour for what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
You're on the same ridge as me? 1,600 miles away, well, but you live right by.
We're in Alaska. My hunting partner, Ethan, ran to another group. They were from Pennsylvania hunting moose. Okay. So hunting moose with the same transporter that was flying us in the airport that lived two houses down.
Yeah. This is a hunting story, so I probably shouldn't.
It's just so wild.
It happens all the time. I swear. Like the past 3 years out west, that's happened to me.
Yeah. And
listening to... it's crazy.
Yeah. I was in Peru one time in, not like South America, Peru.
Yeah.
And we were at a cattle thing and there was a guy there and there's people from the U.S. There was like a convention or whatever. And we were sitting there talking and I didn't know this guy from Adam. And he's like, oh, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Indiana. And he was from Arizona. And he's like, I bought some cattle in Indiana one time. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, okay. He's like, yeah, Brownstown, which is the tiny town I live in. Like, you know, yeah. I live in a little dinky town. And I'm like, that's where I live at. He goes, yeah, Veselage. Veselage is my neighbor. Like, they have a cattle farm next to him. He goes, yeah, Veselage Farms. I'm like, yeah, that's my neighbor. And we were in freaking Peru.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, he had bought cattle from my neighbor. That's insane.
That's wild.
It's weird how that thing, stuff like that happens.
One time, the company where I used to do all the crazy stuff with carrying my computer in the tree, after I left there and I went to the job that I took super serious, I was in Mexico and I was at a hotel and I ran into my old boss.
No way.
At the hotel bar, and we sat down and had a drink together and talked, and that company was looking at buying a company in the same city in Mexico. And yeah, like, I was just like, man, what are the odds?
Yeah.
And like, and we had a really good relationship. Obviously I was happy with everything,
yeah,
but in the past, but like, we were just, but like, it was just like, the, what are the odds of that? Like, the world is so big yet so small.
Its own respect. Apparently my neighbor has like some specific breed that is hard to find.
I gotcha.
I have no idea. I don't know much about cattle. But
speaking of cattle, it's the same thing. When my uncle hardly ever calls me, but he called me on the way down here, right before I turned off the highway. He's like, oh, where are you hunting in Ohio? And I kind of told him just some general. Oh, he's like, oh, I bought some cattle. And he owns cattle.
Yeah.
From the town that we're in.
Yeah.
He, like, right up the road, like, three landowners up is where he bought his cattle from. He's like, oh, yeah, and I bought the horse for Mara, which is my cousin.
Yeah.
At this, the other farm that's in, he's like, do you hunt over by this town? And it's where I'm, the half hour that way that I've been hunting. He's like, yeah, that's the only place I've ever been in Ohio.
That's funny.
And it's like right here.
That is so crazy.
The world is, like you said,
crazy,
small.
Man, small.
It is. But. Oh, man. Well, what do you think, guys? You want to wrap her up? Let's go around. Jake, where can people find your stuff and everything that you're doing? Follow along.
You can find The Void Hunt on YouTube and Instagram. And then, you know, my personal stuff is on there as well. I kind of just tag, multiple businesses, kind of like you do.
Yep.
All underneath the same stuff. So that's pretty much the main two avenues of that.
Yeah, awesome. You got a lot of stuff that you need to get.
Yeah, a lot of my personal stuff is going to be pumped out in 2024.
So we're holding you to it.
Like, give him a free booth somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can hold me to that one by April. Like, I'm going to have six, seven good episodes out.
Awesome, dude. I'm looking forward to it.
So,
yeah, and you can find Before the Echo mostly on YouTube. I also am pretty active on Instagram, but I put out a video every day on Instagram or on Facebook. So, geez, on YouTube.
YouTube, I'll say Facebook.
Yeah,
man.
Sorry.
What are you YouTube. Doing over there?
Yeah,
man?
MySpace.
Bring
up on MySpace. No, YouTube Before the Echo. So, I put a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, check it out. Good stuff. And Josh, super, super authentic. I've enjoyed checking out your stuff, and especially here recently, even before I knew you were coming down here, I've been checking out your stuff, and really, really good stuff. So
thanks.
Yeah. And I guess for Josh's audience, my stuff, East Meets West Hunt, the podcast is kind of the main deal. Find that. The YouTube is under just my name, Bo Martonic. Instagram, either Bo Martonic, East Meets West Hunt, and then eastmeetswesthunt.com. Sign up for the email newsletter to get more information.
Right. Yeah, I should mention my podcast. YouTube is my main thing, but I also have a pretty, like, on Spotify and Apple, anywhere you can make get your podcast, I'll be on there too.
Nope, you had your chance, man. You're done.
Yeah, sorry, cut that out.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.